joined today by Dr. Joel Schumann, who is with Wills Eye Hospital in Philadelphia. And we're so delighted today to sit down and talk a few minutes as we reflect on the year and look ahead to the year ahead as well for 2026, particularly with regard to glaucoma and innovations and technology and so forth. And wanted to ask you your thoughts or what your observations might be in terms of what emerging technologies do you believe are closest to transforming clinical practice, and if there's any barriers, what barriers might what might slow down their adoption?
Great. Well, first of all, thanks so much for asking me to participate. It's always fun talking with you guys. And I think that the topics that you brought up are really fascinating. So let me do my best to address the question. So the first one that you asked was what emerging technologies are closest to transforming practice and what are the barriers? And I think number one on everybody's mind is artificial intelligence. And the use of AI for imaging and also for risk prediction, I think, is probably the closest, and in some ways already transforming practice. Near term, we're looking at automated detection of glaucoma progression from OCT, from the fundus photos, color fundus photos, from visual fields, and from multimodal data. And that would include all of the things I just mentioned, as well as the electronic health record. And it's close because we've already seen the adoption of AI for imaging in retinal disease, specifically in diabetic retinopathy. And so this was the first technology that was approved for use with AI by the FDA. And that technology is it is out there commercially, and it's being used heavily. So I think that this has proven both the efficacy and safety of this sort of approach. The performance really rivals expert readers, the regulatory pathways are clear. Barriers in that area include the generalizability of the AI results, integration of the data into workflows, liability, who bears the liability, and reimbursement. The second item that I would bring up would be home or remote monitoring. And that includes home tonometry, virtual reality, or home visual fields. Early handheld kiosk type OCT. And these are close as well because in the post-COVID era, we have more comfort with remote care and the technology is maturing. Again, there are barriers, data reliability, patient adherence, data triage burden, and also reimbursement. I would add a third and a fourth technology. So third is the sustained release or controlled release drug delivery. And here we have things like intracameral implants and next-gen depots for glaucoma, specifically at this point for intraocular pressure lowering. But we're seeing studies of these sorts of devices for neuro enhancement or neuroprotection as well. These sorts of implants include the iDose or Durysta. As I mentioned, there are other implants. Spyglass has an implant that is attached to an intraocular lens that's well along in studies. Perfuse has an implant that's also well along in clinical studies showing neuro enhancement. So I think that there are some really interesting new technologies in this space that will transform the way that we do things. We have some already approved examples. The FDA has already approved Durysta and iDose. I think that we're going to see more devices like that. The pipeline is maturing. And then on the barrier side, we have costs of these items versus generics, safety signals, and patient acceptance and workflow. New SLT device, the Direct SLT, which simplifies a procedure that is done and should be done by surgeons, and it takes a procedure for which you needed to have a fair amount of skill. You need to use a contact lens and visualize the trabecular meshwork and then treat the trabecular meshwork with a laser. And the new device, you simply point it at the eye, it finds the location that it's supposed to shoot at, and within a couple of seconds, it applies 100 spots translimbally. And so you don't need a contact lens in order to do it. So it really decreases the level of expertise that's necessary in order to perform the procedure. I would say that the barrier there is the controversial aspect of it in terms of who should be doing the procedure. And in addition to that, it doesn't work quite as well as standard SLT. So it didn't succeed in the non-inferiority studies, the I think it was the GLORIOS study that was published. And so you get about 2 millimeters less efficacy with that procedure. So I think that addresses your first question.
It's certainly a fascinating time to be in glaucoma. There's so much going on for sure, and that perfectly sums it up. And I wondered if we could maybe take a little deeper dive then and look ahead, like maybe what factors will determine whether a quote hyped unquote innovation in 2026 would truly integrate into everyday practice, whether it be cost or training or workflow impact, other factors as well. So
I think all of those things are important. Let's start off with, 5 tests. So, first, I would say evidence. Is there good evidence? There's this strong multi-center real-world data that show outcomes that matter. And by that, I mean things like progression, vision, and quality of life. The second, you've already mentioned workflow impact. It should simplify this. It's not add clicks and screens. Third, you also mentioned, I'll call it economics. So is there a clear way of getting paid for doing the work? What are the hidden costs? Are there low hidden costs or are there sizable hidden costs? And that includes training and staff time, but it also includes things like click fees, which we are seeing with Direct SLT. That being another barrier to that particular technology. Fourth, I would say, is interoperability. By that, I mean that the technology has to work across devices. With different types of electronic health records, there can't be a vendor lock-in to a proprietary type of software where you can't get the information out of the device. Also, I would add, we really should be able to interchange the information between devices that do the same thing. So, that's a problem that we're seeing now with optical coherence tomography, for instance, where different manufacturers, have great machines, but you can't take the output of one machine and compare it to the output of another machine, even though both are stating that they're measuring in microns. Apparently, a micron is not a micron. When it comes to OCT. So it means something different on one machine manufacturer relative to another. And then finally, trust. The clinicians need interpretable outputs with predictable safety. Those things are important in integrating a technology into your practice. So the winners don't have to be the flashiest tools in 2026. They'll be the ones that make a busy clinic run better.
How can clinicians or practices prepare now to take advantage of these, the most promising 2026 innovations once they reach maturity?
That's a great question. So there are several things that the practices could be doing now to prepare. One is cleaning up their data. So standardize the OCT and visual field protocols, ensure high quality, analyzable data, prepare the IT systems for exporting and interpreting new data streams. Build digital readiness, so identify an internal innovation level and train staff so that they can understand and work with AI and remote monitoring technology so that they're literate in those areas. Start small and measure what the impact is. You want to pilot the new tools in defined patient groups. With clear metrics so that you know that you're receiving output of value. And then scale only if there's a measurable benefit. And then finally, prepare patients and payers. So educate the patients on the coming shifts to continuous monitoring of intraocular pressure, for instance, and controls release therapies and engage payers and institutions early about workflows and reimbursement.
And are there any, for lack of a better word, wild card innovations or maybe experimental approaches in 2026 that could unexpectedly disrupt the field?
Yeah, I think there are a few. So let's start with neuroprotection and metabolic therapy. So, for instance, nicotinamide and pyruvate is nicotinamide vitamin D3. It's been shown now in a few studies that it may have a neuroprotective or neuroenhancing effect, but it's still in clinical trials and it's widely available. You don't need a prescription to get it. On the other hand, you can have some serious side effects, deleterious side effects from it, specifically liver inflammation related to the supplement. And so that's something that where the clinician needs to educate the patient about both the risks and benefits of potentially using this. And we as clinicians are pretty used to and adept at providing that information and educating the patient appropriately. But this is one you can't just kind of throw into the mix. You need to really discuss it with your patient. It is not something that, for instance, the American Academy of Ophthalmology and the American Glaucoma Society are recommending that we prescribe or recommend to our patients, and certainly not without educating them about what the risks are. Neurotrophin, mitochondrial support. We're seeing, phase one, two studies. If phase two and three results are strong, that could shift glaucoma care from being completely IOP centric. To including biologically modifiable targets. Second, I would mention gene therapy and regenerative strategies. So, the resilience of the retinal ganglion cells may be something that we can enhance. People are working very hard on optic nerve regeneration. We're very much not there yet, but it is an area of intense scientific interest and of clinical importance. And stem cell approaches for optic nerve regeneration and support are also in studies. And then finally, I would mention one area that consortium and I are working on in terms of stem cell therapy for trabecular meshwork regeneration in order to restore normal pressure control in people with glaucoma by introducing stem cells to the trabecular meshwork and outflow system. So the early clinical signals there would reshape the long-term expectations. Two more things. One is identification of new biomarkers and continuous monitoring. So perfusion metrics, tear and aqueous biomarkers, or reliable real-time intraocular pressure measurements could change the way that we diagnose and treat and what the thresholds are for those treatments. And then artificial intelligence for treatment planning, so individualization of therapy in glaucoma that would identify the trajectory of a given individual and allow you to treat based on the likelihood that that person is going to get worse and how quickly they're likely to get worse. It could optimize the timing of surgery. So, for instance, if you had somebody who's unlikely to get worse over a long period of time, well, maybe that's somebody that you would follow with laser or laser and medicine. Whereas if you have somebody who's likely to get worse quickly, gee, that's somebody who you might go directly to surgery, or you might have a very low threshold for moving to surgery in that patient. Actually, there's one more thing that I've mentioned, which is genetics and the use of polygenic risk scores. So that is available now. And it is something that can help to predict who is likely to develop glaucoma if you look at people who have the lowest polygenic risk scores versus those that have the highest. So it's not just a test that you can send off and say, okay, well, you're going to get glaucoma or you're not. It will give you a likelihood, but if the patient falls into those very high risk or very low risk groups, it can give you some confidence in planning that that patient's follow-up and treatment.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you'd like to add that we haven't touched upon, or anything else that you feel is really important for our audience to know?
I think that we've talked about a number of things. Hopefully, that is helpful for clinicians in our community. And there's plenty for researchers, scientists to work on. We still have a long way to go in enhancing the way that we deliver glaucoma care and what we can deliver. But I think that we're seeing progress, and I'm excited about the new things that are becoming available and that people are working on now.
Well, Dr. Schumann, thank you so much for your time and your insights. They are so valued. And we wish you a happy holiday season.
Happy holidays. Thank you.